Welcome back to another episode of It's All Bad. I'm Russian Danny. I'm here with Keith. We got Lawrence with us. We have a very special announcement before we get to the guests. So January 14th will be our first, maybe annual, maybe semi-annual, maybe who knows. It's All Badapalooza. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. That's the name. We're going live from the Echoplex in Echo Park, Los Angeles. We will have past guests. We will have some new guests. We might even have a special guest. We're going to have some musical guests. We're going to have a DJ. It's going to be a party. We're going to record live. We will try to maybe live stream it. I don't know who. We'll try to live stream it. We're going to post it online, and it's going to just be a great time. We got new merch that we're making. We're going to have some posters. We're going to have some new shirts, some old stuff that people have been asking for will be remade. We're going to be able to preview some stuff. Like, yeah, it's just going to be rad. So we can't wait to have you guys there. But for today, we have a good friend of mine, Big Ed, who came on, who we've been trying to bring on for a while now, who did everything from touring with the Grateful Dead to smoking PCP on the side of the freeway with his crack dealer, Lafayette, to reconnecting with his son that he didn't know that, I mean, I guess he knew existed, all the way to my very, very favorite relapse story of all time, where he relapsed for 3 days, smoked after was it a dentist visit, Lawrence? After a dental visit, which the same thing happened to me, oddly enough. And 3 days smoke crack binge, and then ended up going to an AA camp out after being awake for 3 days that he had, was on the board of people that organized it, and then getting sober, which is the sobriety date he has today. So let me not take any more time. Here is I wish Jerry Garcia would already died with Big Ed.
Welcome back to It's All Bad. I'm Keith.
What up? I'm Russian Danny.
And my name's Ed Taylor.
Big Ed.
Big Ed.
Big Ed from Dago.
We were supposed to have Ed on a while ago. We were supposed to have you on.
I think two different other times.
Yeah.
And once I was sick, and I think Lawrence wasn't feeling well a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
That's right. And there was another time, too. It just hasn't lined up.
Because I went to search for the address for this place, and it was in my conversation, my text convo with you. Like, I had to like copy it from our conversation and send it to you.
Well, I'm here now.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's all that matters.
I'm here tonight.
Where are you from, Ed?
La Mesa. Big Ed from La Mesa.
Yeah, Big Ed from La Mesa.
I was talking to Keith earlier. We were talking about prison.
And he's like,
"What they call you in prison?" I said, "Big Ed." I've always been Big Ed. I got the name before prison.
How old were you when you started getting loaded?
Sorry, allergies. I was 15. I was 15, and like, you know, I grew up in like the 80s, the Just Say No, you know, and I was around like.
Me too.
Like that. I remember I found this like Ziploc, one of the big ones that you could fit a pound in of weed. And I found it like in my mom's room. And I was like, you know, the sheriffs would come and they'd do the whole rigmarole and show you the samples of all the shit when you're a little kid. And I saw this big bag and I was like, dude, my mom's on drugs. Right. And I like hit it. I like threw it out in the bushes in the yard.
It was just a Ziploc bag?
Full of weed.
Oh, with buds.
A big one.
Oh, wow.
Probably like a pound of weed. And I fucking put it in the bushes outside and hit it. And her and my stepdad came home and were like... I was like 10. Where the fuck is that motherfucking bag? Like,
no way.
They were pissed. They were so pissed. And I was like, I just don't want you to be on drugs, Mom. Yeah. So, I mean, I saw it. I also have this story. I didn't realize it till way later in life, but my uncle... My uncle lived in this town called Santee, and they call it Clanty, you know, and it's like all, it, like it, in the 80s, it was like all bikers, and Hell's Angels lived across the street from them, and I remember there would be like all these plants hanging from the rafters in the garage. Like, I didn't know, I was like, what's Uncle Steve doing?
You know,
like, we were little kids, and I remember he had this is probably like 83 when like cable was just getting started and he had the Playboy channel. And like, we were just figuring out what girls were, right? But he would bring these whole plants inside that were cured. And he would have my cousin and I trim weed for him when we were like, I did it like once or twice. And he'd be like, just cut the buds like this off here, put this in this bag, put all the shake in this bag, and you can watch Playboy Channel.
No way. Dude, that's a dope bribe. Dude.
And we, you know, we were like 9, 10. I was like, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, jeez. I knew what drugs were for a long time, but I was also like, I grew up in that just say no thing. So I was really scared of them. Like when I had friends that were like, I smoked weed and I was like, oh, did you die?
Yeah.
Why aren't you in jail?
Yeah.
And, but the first time, I think it was like ninth grade, I ended up being friends with this stoner dude that was a year older than me. And he took me over to this other guy's house like halfway through ninth grade. And they were just passing around the joint and it came to me and I was like, all right. And I really liked it. I really liked marijuana. I don't know if I've ever told you guys this story before, but I was 21 Jump Streeted at school. Like, I've only got a year and a half of high school under my belt.
Yeah.
Like, so beginning of 10th grade, all I was doing was really like smoking weed and drinking. And so this dude shows up. He's supposed to be a junior. He's got long hair, wears like Bob Marley shirts. This is like 91, 92. And hangs out with all the stoners and skaters at lunch. And he'd always hit me up. Hey, man, you got any weed you could sell me? And I didn't deal weed. Like, I smoked pinners or, like, shit out of a can, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we had to save up to get a nickel.
Yeah.
And one day I'd smoked before school. We can edit that out, right? I smoked before school, so I got this little roach in my wallet. And Fernando comes by, and he like, hey, what's up, Ed? You got any weed? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I'd known this guy for like 3 months, right? And he was seemed cool. And I give him this roach and he's like, here, take a couple bucks for it. And I was like, nah, I don't need any money. He's like, nah, take it. And when you're like 15, I was like, that's a piece of pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the first day back, there's Christmas break, right? I sold him that weed probably in September, October, beginning of 10th
grade. A roach.
Yeah, a roach.
I mean, you didn't even sell him the roach. Let's be
honest. I gave it to him.
You gave it to him and he gave you a few dollars.
Yeah.
He tipped you. For the roach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were like my mom's attorney was like, we could get him off with like entrapment or whatever. But everyone was like, just fucking whatever. Let it go. Well, so what happened though, the first day back of second semester, right? Christmas break, first period class, the VP comes in and he points to me and this girl who I'd known since seventh grade. But like, we'd never talked. And he's like, Ed Taylor, Sheila Mueller, come with me. And her and I in this class together look at each other like, what? Like us? Takes us down and we follow him. I didn't even know my school had a basement, right? So we go behind the fucking theater, through these doors I'd never been in, down these stairs, go around this corner, and there's like a basement. He opens his door and there's like 12 kids in zip ties and like 15 sheriffs.
No way.
Yeah. And he was like, read us our rights when we got down there, right? Puts us in zip ties, sits us on the ground, and the main cop was like, now that you're all here, you know, I'd like to introduce you to Officer Valenzuela. And this dude walked in, his long hair was shaved, he's in a sheriff's outfit, and it was like our friend.
No way.
And he fucking walks in, and he ended up, he was like 23 years old, and he'd been gone to high school for a whole fucking semester doing homework, like the whole...
No way.
The whole shit. Yeah. And so my mom calls her lawyer, and she's like, what do I do with my, you know, what do I do? And he's like, oh, they do this all the time. You just go pick him up at juvenile hall. They'll let him out today, or, you know, sometimes they'll just let him go to your custody right then because it's weed. They wanted to make an example out of us. Like, we were on the front page of the local section of the San Diego paper.
No
way.
As,
like, big high school undercover drug bust.
No way.
Between 12 students, they didn't even get an ounce.
Wow.
It was so fucked up. So that was my first... I ended up in juvenile hall for a week. That was my introduction to...
For a fucking roach?
For a roach. Yeah. Because it was for sales. Sales of a controlled substance.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, shit's a little more lax these days. You know, it's a little different nowadays, but yeah. So I was like, they kicked me out of the whole school district. I couldn't even go to the continuation school. They're like, you got to get out of here, right? You're done. So a lot of my friends, I had two friends that also got busted in that bust, and most of them went to other schools for like a year, which was how long we got kicked out for, and then came back to my old high school. But I was like, dude, they sent me to the school called Summit High, and it was like, San Diego had it was a city school, but it was out in the county, and there was like 15 of them. And there were little tiny ones, like little satellite schools, and they were where you went when you got kicked out of continuation school. They were like for the worst of the worst. And like, it's like 12 kids. Class was from 8:30 in the morning till noon. Like, we would go in at 8:30, we'd watch CNN for an hour, and then write a half a page about what we watched. And that counted as humanities, English, philosophy. Like, that one, it was crazy. Like, you could smoke with the teachers.
No way. No way.
Dude, it was fucking wild.
Dude.
There was only two girls in the school. Most of the dudes in there were living in group, most of them were gang members from Oakland that were living in group homes in San Diego. That was most of the students there. And so, the two girls that were there, one stabbed her boyfriend at school and the other one stabbed a teacher at school. Like that.
No way.
And I'm like this, like, you know.
Roach dealer?
Yeah. Fucking roach dealer. And I'm like, dude, the teachers are like, you don't belong here. We got to get you the fuck out of here. Right. And so I took the California. They lied about my age because in California, you can take the proficiency test, which you can take when you're 16 and go to junior college or whatever. It's like the GED, but a little bit better. They could say it's equal to a diploma. And so they only give it twice a year. And my teachers were like, they were giving it a month before I turned 16. And my teachers were like, dude, we're lying about your age. We don't want you here for another 6 months until it comes around again. So these teachers lied about my age and I was out of high school a month before I turned 16. I was done.
No wow. way. That's yeah. incredible.
I was done.
And then what'd you get into?
Meth. No, you know what's
funny?
You know
funny? What's great is, before you go off on that, I had a very similar bust when I went to Fairfax, you know, that happened. But, you know, this is like, what year was your thing at?
91.
So 2001, maybe 2000, 2001. I was supposed to graduate in 2003. I don't think I made it fucking past 2001. You know, oh, no, because I was still in high school when 9/11 happened. So that was 2001. That was September, yeah. I would have been in... Whatever, you know, it don't matter. But they did the same kind of bust at Fairfax. But at that point, it was already, they weren't trying to find a fucking roach, you know. They jammed up all these fools for fucking, for meth. It was all the meth kids, you know.
No
all
way.
The taggers, like at that point, like the amphetamine fucking.
They had a dude that went to, they had a 21 Jump Street dude.
There was a dude and he was a tagger. And like, dude, he would ride the bus. I remember him putting up stickers. He never caught an actual tag. But he put up stickers, you know, and like we would clown him and say he was whacking.
They had
like
some
shit,
fucking
you know?
Cop that like grew up writing, like doing his tags for him and putting it on a sticker.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but like he just put up stickers. He never actually caught it, like, a, you know, and like, dude, he kicked it for like everybody knew him, you know?
Yeah.
I think he even like fingered a girl. Not making that part up. You know?
I felt so betrayed when that dude walked in. Yeah. I was sad. I was like, I thought we were fucking friends and you're a cop. Like, it was fucked up.
Wait, so the girl sold them weed too? Sheila? Was that her name?
Yeah. There was a couple. Dude, one of those dudes that I got busted with, he is sober now too. Like, I hadn't seen this dude in 20 years and we ran into each other in rehab in like 2011. And I was like, dude, he was like fighting a Fed case for like attempted murder and like 50 pounds and like kinds of crazy shit. And he's like, got like 8 years now.
Down in San Diego. Awesome.
Yeah. And it's a trip. So whenever I run into him, I'm like, remember that drug bust?
Where it all began.
Dude, well, why was I at that school? So it's all like these gangbanger dudes, right? And then there's these two older dudes that are like 19, these stoner dudes that are like still trying to get their diplomas. They're like straight out of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Spicoli vibe, like long hair, like just... baked, blazed out of their minds all the time, and they would skate. And so I would go skate with these dudes after school, and I'm getting drug tested because now I'm on probation, right? And they're like, bro, you ever done acid? And I'm like, no. And they're like, it won't show up on a drug test. You should try this. And I was like, I don't know. Acid? I'm like, I've never even heard of that. And so finally, like, you know, I'd go skate with them, and they'd be like, whoa, look at the trails. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Right? This sounds cool. And, so he sold me three hits for $10 and I'm like, well, I'm going to try them. I'm going to go to a concert and I'm going to see the Black Crowes. And I they didn't tell me that it takes like an hour to hit. And I think I've talked to you about this before, Danny, but you know, when you don't know that acid takes an hour, it's like you wait 10 minutes and it's like nothing's happening. So you're like, oh, I'll take another. And then like you wait another 20 minutes. You're like, this shit's bunk. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I took the last one and I was high. I was high, and I just remember like having an incredible, like, I fell in love with LSD the first time I took it.
That's
like,
great.
Had the best time. And I remember going to my friend, I was just, couldn't stop laughing the whole night. And my friend's driving home and he would pull the e-brake on the freeway and scream. Like, and I would just start dying laughing. Like, I couldn't stop. And I remember going to Denny's and I'm eating this sundae and I'm just like playing with my food, tripping out on it. And out of the corner of my eye, the swinging door that went into the kitchen had like one of the little porthole windows. And out of the corner of my eye, there was like a cook was like looking at me. But every time I turned my head, he wasn't there. And I was like, I told my friend, I'm like, what's that cook doing? What is he tripping on me? And he's like, there's no one there. But I went home and because we're going to talk about the Grateful Dead, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I go home.
Sure as hell hope so.
I go home that night and I had like all these records that I'd always listened. I grew up on rock and roll from my aunts, my mom. I inherited all these records when I was really young. And I had heard from people like the Grateful Dead's really good on acid when you're on acid. And so I had one record and I put it on when I got home up to my room. I remember I walked in and my mom was like, hey, honey, how was the concert? And I was like, my eyes were like the size of fucking quarters, you know. I'm like, it was great, mom, going upstairs, you know. And I went upstairs and put that record on, and I laid on my bed and must have played that record back to back, both sides, for like 4 hours, and just watched my ceiling melt, you know. And I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Like, this is, I'm here, right? You know, I was there. Like, I was there, and. But anyway, that, you know, I did a bunch of acid, started doing speed and caught a pretty bad meth habit at like, I mean, I grew up in El Cajon down in San Diego and La Mesa. And it's like, they called it the meth capital of the world back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And there was, I mean, there's still like all kinds of biker clubhouses down there and shit. And so there was a lot of meth and I picked up this meth habit. And after a few months, my best friend was, I think she was like 18 or 19 at the time, and she was a freshman. She moved from San Diego to Wilmington, North Carolina, and she was a freshman at the University of North Carolina. And I call her up and I'm like, Nico, I'm on speed. Like, can I come stay with you and get off this shit? I've been on it for like 3 months. Sorry. Let me have a drink of water.
So that's from Wilmington, right?
Yeah. Or right outside or something. Yeah. Huh.
So... Keith thinks I've got COVID.
Can you blame him? Fuck.
No, man, I've got crazy allergies.
Please, fucking Danny, Lawrence, you know what I mean? Like,
all talking in the little room. Dude, while I was in there were so many crazy stories, even just in those 3 months. Like, I burned a house down by accident, you know, an abandoned house. It was an abandoned house, and we'd go in there and smoke speed and with candles, and like, we'd all been up for like 4 or 5 days, and everyone passed out. Someone knocked over a candle, and we woke up to like, a bedroom on fire.
No way.
We were like, oh, better get out of here. And I mean,
in El Cajon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like,
the whole house burned down.
Yeah. But we were gone. But it, like, you know, drive back the next day and it's just it's gone. So like, I had to get off speed at that point. And so I go to North Carolina and I'm, you know, kind of have my shit together. I'm smoking a little weed and, it was like, I was there maybe a month and a half. And Nico, my friend, is like, she always lets me use her car when she's at work or school. And I was like doing little jobs and stuff. And I got a job as I was an extra in The Crow while I was out there, was really fucking cool for like, it was like $300 a day. And I was like 17. I was like, this is cool. And she's like, hey, this band, The Grateful Dead's coming to town. They're like playing Chapel Hill. It's 2 hours away. Do you want to go? I heard there's a big party in the parking lot. And I was like, yeah, let's go. Well, she ends up having to work. And I was like, hey, can I borrow your car? And she's like, fuck no, you can't take my car 2 hours to go to a fucking party at the Grateful Dead show. So I had $50, a backpack. I put some clothes in it, like 2 changes of clothes, a jacket. And I made a sign that said Dead and like went and stood on the freeway in North Carolina. I was like, I'm going, right? And these fucking hillbillies pick me up. They're like, what's a Dead, man? You know, they got like a gun rack. They're handing me beers through the back of the... I'm in the bed of the truck and we're going like 90 drinking beers. And I mean, it's North Carolina in the 90s. And I get there and I get to the Dead lot and there's like 10,000 fucking people just raging. And I was immediately like, I mean, you could, all the smells of like weed and food and like patchouli and fucking dogs. You know, I was like, you know, fires. I was like, this is the shit. Like, I'm like, this is sick. This is like, what is this? You know, I mean, it was big. And I found some dude to sell me acid, and I spent $40 on 10 hits of acid, and I took it all, right? I had $50 on me, but I spent four. I was like, okay, I'm going to do some acid. I'm here. So might as well. And I do this 10 strip, and I fucking have a blast that night. And I don't get into the show, you know, and later that night, I end up at some after party at this like reggae bar, and I'm sitting there and I'm fucking lit. And this little fucking baby who's like three or I think she was three in a diaper at like 2 a.m, just in a diaper, walks up to me in this bar and is like, my mom wants to know if you need a place to stay tonight. And I was just like, did this fucking baby just talk to me? And why is it in a bar at 2 a.m.?
No way.
Yeah. And her name was Kaya. The kid's name was Kaya, right? And I'm like, and I look up and her mom's in the booth across from me, and she like gives me the nod. She's like, yeah, you need a place or what? And I'm like, yeah, I need somewhere to stay. I'm fucking, I can't even see my hands right now. So we go, they had met some fucking hillbilly tweaker dude that like played Allman Brothers on his guitar all night while we tried to, you know, sleep. And I was up all night frying, and we go back to the lot the next day for the second show, and I don't have a ticket. And all these kids that I'd met, there was a guy and three girls and a baby, and they're from New York. And the dude's like, a couple of them are NYU students and they're from the city. And the dude's like, here's the keys to my car, because they knew I didn't have a ticket. And he's like, if you get tired and want to crash, just go to my car and you can sleep in the back seat. So 10 p.m. comes around, and I've been up, you know, 2 days now, and I'm coming down and go to sleep in this guy's car. And I don't know if you guys have ever taken like a quick nap after like a good acid trip, but you wake up a little confused, you know?
Yeah.
And I wake up in the back of this car and we're driving, you know, and I'm like, oh, fuck, right? What time is it? And they're like, oh, it's like 3 a.m, 4 a.m. And I'm like, where are we? And they're like, Pennsylvania, almost to New Jersey.
No way. Yeah,
and I was like, I live in North Carolina. And they go, well, fuck, we could drop you off here if you want to hitch back, or you can come to Albany with us. And I'm like, fuck, let's go to Albany.
No way.
That's how I ended up on Dead Tour.
Yeah. Wow. No way.
Yeah. Yep. So that was.
So you stayed at their house in Albany?
The next shows were in Albany. The chick with the baby, who was like 23, you know, age inappropriate for, I mean, maybe for a 17-year-old. It was the 90s.
Yeah.
But
I ended up hooking up with this girl, and she's got this really, she comes from this really wealthy family. So she has her own house in Sag Harbor out on Long Island, and her parents are in Europe for the summer. So she has this like 27-story apartment in Manhattan, like overlooking Central Park too. Right. So like, I skip Albany. I'm like, and she's like, hey, you want to go to my house in Sag Harbor? I got to do some shit, but we'll catch up to them because the next shows after Albany are in Nassau in Long Island. So we skip Albany. I hang out with her, and we do these shows at Nassau. I went to my first Dead show in Nassau Coliseum in Long Island, and still, like, to this day, didn't think I was like into the Grateful Dead that much, the music, but the fucking, it's just, there's just drugs and women everywhere. It's like whatever you want, you know, it's like right there. And so after those shows, the Dead used to tour like 4 times a year. It would be like spring, summer, fall, and winter tours. And then like offshoot shows here and there. And their tours would be like a month and a half, and they'd play like 5 places, but there would be like there'd be 2 shows in Oakland, and then like a week off, and then like 3 shows in Vegas, then 2 to 4 days off, and then like 5 shows in Seattle or whatever. So they always gave all the Deadheads time to like get to the next spot, you know, is what it felt like. That's what it felt like. I mean, I don't know if that was real or not, but they did. And so after Albany, or after Long Island, there's no shows for like a month and a half. And this chick's like, you want to stay with me in Manhattan for a while? And I'm like, yeah. So she just had like her parents' ATM. It was just like cash machine, right? In a fucking apartment in Manhattan. I'm 17 years old, and I could go into bars and drink in New York. Like, they never carded. I saw like 13-year-old kids drinking in bars back then. Like little kids. I was like, what the fuck? So that was fun. And I remember Nico, while we had just gotten an apartment back in North Carolina, and she had gotten robbed, and she like someone burglarized our house, and like it was a whole thing. Like I was in a lot of trouble because I didn't come home from the shows, you know, and I was gone for like a month and a half or something. And so I get back there and it's so much. On the way back to North Carolina, I find a ride to Tennessee, right? So I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I'm telling you guys, this is a weird acid trip. I'm hanging out with this dude. I mean, I'm doing acid as often as possible at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not really selling it yet, but it's around and I'm probably doing it a few times a week, a couple times a week. And I'm on a bunch of hits and I'm talking to this, I'm hanging out at this dude's house. And these are like college students that, forget what's in Knoxville, University of Tennessee or something. Yeah. And I'm really high and this girl walks in and she's like, yeah, I just came from this AIDS symposium and we were talking about this guy gave a speech and he's HIV positive. And I don't know if you guys have done acid, but when people say shit, it puts shit into your head, you know, while you're tripping.
Yeah.
And so for like the next 3 months, I thought I had AIDS. I was
like, just cause she said that?
She said I had the worst, I've had two bad trips and that was one of them. I was like, fuck, I'm gonna die. Like I start crying. I'm like, my life's over. Dude, it was so
did you go
real.
Get tested? Or you couldn't, there wasn't tell you.
I mean, I got tested months and months later, but I mean, I knew I didn't have it, you know,
like, but once, you didn't know, but like, you know, but you're like, you, yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy. So I don't know, man. It was, there's so many fun, great. You guys want to hear a fun Grateful Dead story?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Wait, Jerry, so this is what, 93-ish, right?
92.
Jerry died in 95.
95. So I did this for like 2.5 years. It was before I really, you know, got into heroin. I got into selling acid, and there was points where I was eating, you know, 40, 50 hits of acid at a time.
No
and
way.
I did this brain study, right, with this doctor through this treatment center I went through like 10 years ago or something, and electroencephalogram, they measure your brain waves and all this shit, and they do it with addicts. And this doctor was really into psychedelics, and he's like, I had to do this whole questionnaire on like how much psychedelics I've eaten and all that stuff. And I figured it was probably around 5,000 or 6,000 hits, like throughout my acid career. Cause there was times when like dudes would just dump a puddle in your hand, and we were getting like a gram of rock crystal LSD. It comes, you know, it's when it comes from the chemist, it's crystal.
Oh, really?
And a gram will make 100 sheets, make 1,000 hits. So, like, dudes that would get a quarter ounce, I knew guys that were, like, laying sheets and making liquid with the crystal. So they're getting the shit right from the chemist. And they would get, like, they'd call it a thumbprint. Like, you'd get, like, a quarter ounce, like, in a jar, like a mason jar of the crystal. And after you wash it, you have all that residue. And you could do, like, a pinky print or a thumbprint of the raw Chris, is what it's called. And I never did that shit. I was like, I was scared. I was like, because there's, you don't even know how much it is.
You're
like,
yeah,
a thumbprint, yeah. You know, of the real deal.
Yeah.
It was probably like 200 hits, something like that, you know? And I was like, well, I'm good. You can put a giant puddle in my hand and I'll eat 50 in a puddle. But I was always scared to do the rock crystal.
Is some of it liquid?
Well, you would take the crystal and you could make either liquid or wash it into paper.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then with the liquid, then you drop it onto fucking, you know, onto sweet tarts or onto whatever, sugar cubes or whatever.
You know, I got a great liquid story. So I'm the old Boston Garden, they used to have, it's torn down now, I think, but the Dead used to play at Boston Garden, and it was my first time in Boston. And we had driven straight from San Francisco to make the first shows of like, or second shows at East Coast Tour were Boston. And I'd never been there, and we get to Boston, and I'm a little, you know, I'm a little manic. We just get into town, like the shows are that night. I'm like, what's good? What are we going to get into? And I'm there with a couple friends, and we were all like doing mini thins to like drive. Oh, we drove 36 straight hours from San Francisco to Boston. And I get there, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And my homie J-Cat, I haven't seen him for months, right? His name's J-Cat. He comes up. He's like, what's up, Ed? Let me see your hand. And I fucking put out my hand, and he just squirts like a bunch of acid into my hand. He's like, there, it was like a puddle. It was probably 50, 60 hits of acid. And I was just like, yes, right? Now we're fucking talking. And now I'm like, well, now what am I going to do? And I'm thinking like, I'd like to maybe go into the show. And right then this girl walks up to me. She's like, Ed, you need a ticket? And I was like, yeah. And she hands me this ticket. And I go into this show and I'm like, the acid's starting to kick in, right? The music starts and all the fucking crew that I would hang with would sit in the fill zone. And it was like Phil Lesh, the bass player, on his side of the stage, up in like the nosebleed would be like all the drug heads. Like that's where we would all congregate. So I'm up in the fill zone and this big dude sits down next to me and the old Boston Garden, I think they had like those wood armrests, like old school wooden armrests on the seats. And he's like, hey bro, move your arm. I'm like, really high, right? He like put some white powder on the armrest, lines it out. And he's like, you want one? I'm like, yeah. And I thought it was, I was thinking it was Coke or Speed or something. It was white. And I did it. And it was like, I didn't recognize the flavor. You know what I mean? The drug flavor. I was like, that's a new one. And, and I'm like, what is that? He's like, never done China white? And I'm like, oh. I'm like, no. And he's like, you're tripping, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, and he goes, we call that a cosmic Charlie.
No.
Acid and heroin.
No way.
Wow. It was a cosmic Charlie.
Was that your first time doing heroin?
No, first time doing China white. I'd done a little heroin here and there, but I'd never seen China white before. Yeah. So I'm sitting there and dead shows, they have an intermission. There's like a 30-minute intermission where all the house lights come on and then they do a second set. And I remember like the house lights came on and usually you go find your friends or like say what's up, sell some drugs, like get whatever. And I was just glued to my seat because I was on heroin too. And I just remember the house lights came on and like, I couldn't tell who people were. I was just like, whoa, I'm in a sea of colors. And I don't know what's happening. And my friend Justin, after the show ended, we were like a couple of the last people out of there because I just stayed in my seat when the house lights went on after the show and he came and found me. He's like, hey, what are you doing up here? I'm like, dude, I don't want to try and get out of here on my own.
Yo, fucking Cosmic Charlie shit. That's what, motherfucker.
Cosmic
Charlie. Cosmic Charlie fucking got me. Yeah, Dead Tour was fun. Like,
were people doing meth at the Dead shows too?
People are doing everything. I did meth at a... Wait, I'll get to the meth part. So, I'm in Oregon, and then I'm in Eugene, and the next shows are in Vegas. And my homie Justin, I end up running around with this dude named Justin Summerhill, and he's from Memphis, Tennessee, full hillbilly accent. Because my best friend, we're on the road together off and on for like 2.5 years, and we were both broke, but I had a van. And so when you were broke but I had a car, you could get, we called them gas riders, right? You'd find people that needed a ride to the next show that would pay for, you know, if you had gas, hotel, food, or whatever, you just call them. So we found some gas riders. And this dude had a bunch of acid on him, a bunch of money and all that, him and his girlfriend. And I don't know his name, but, you know, when you would drive between like Eugene and Vegas, there's like a 5-day, 6-day, you know, that you have to get to the next show. And like every rest area along those highways, I mean, it would be like hippies, like triple parked, tents everywhere. I mean, there were so many of us, like cops were just like, two cops show up and they're just like, can't do shit. There's like too many of you. That was really fun about Dead Tour. Like you roll into somewhere like Deer Creek, Indiana, that had like 10 cops on the forest and there's like 20,000 people. I mean, there's people camping on the McDonald's lawn, you know, walking their dogs, like walking their dogs anywhere.
No.
You know? Yeah. It was wild. And so we get these gas riders and I remember we had stopped I remember someone mentioning some electric Kool-Aid, you know, and I was like, whatever, we're all on our own thing. We're all on drugs and getting high and whatever. And so we stop at this rest area. And, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night and you're really thirsty and you just kind of chug, right? You just fucking grab the bottle and chug. So I was sleeping in the van. Justin was sleeping in the van. The two gas riders, they were like out. They had a little tent out in the grass. And I woke up at like 3-4 in the morning and I was thirsty, dry. I find this bottle of Sunny Delight he had bought and there's a piece of, it was dark, right? I just start chugging this thing and I drink like half this bottle and I lay down and immediately I'm like not tired anymore. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why can't I go back to sleep? Mm-hmm. And within like 5 minutes, I start seeing little sparklies everywhere, right? I'm like, oh fuck. I'm like, whoa, shit. And so I turned the lights on. There was a piece of paper taped to the front of the Sunny Delight that had a huge skull and crossbones that he had drawn on it. It said, do not drink. So he put a whole sheet in this motherfucker. So there was 100 hits of acid in this, and the citric acid and the vitamin C kicks off the LSD even more, right? So, and I chugged half this bottle. So I'm like, no, I'm not. We're all getting up, right? I'm not fucking doing this for 3 hours until all you motherfuckers wake up. So I woke up everyone. I'm like, come on, everyone drink this shit. We're on the road. Let's go. So that was a fun trip. But so we finally get to fucking Vegas. I just remember like listening to Black Sabbath the whole way, like over and over. I was like in the back of the van, just watching the sky upside down. Like, yeah, this is the shit. But so we get to Vegas, totally broke. And me and Jess, like, we'll panhandle sometimes, or sometimes you'll get dudes to front you some drugs to like hustle some money, or like whatever you got to do. It's just, it always works out. And Justin's like, we're going to go panhandle. We're going to go our separate ways, get a couple bucks, get a beer, and like figure shit out. We'd never been to Vegas, right? We didn't know you got free booze. We didn't know anything. And I was like 17 and I was 18, but I had a beard and I was like 6'7". So I go into slots of fun, and all the deadheads would take over Circus back then. And it was crazy. There'd be chicks barefoot walking through the lobby with like their dog, and like it was just crazy. Like there would be like 2,000-3,000 hippies staying at Circus. And so I go to slots of fun and I pull up to a blackjack table and I'm watching this dude gamble, and I've never even watched it before. I don't know anything about it. And I'm watching it and I figure it out. And this dude throws a $5 chip in front of me and he's like, go ahead. I'm like, no. He's like, no, go ahead and play it. Some head. And so I turn this $5 chip into like $900 in about an hour and a half, right? And I'm like, this is sick, right? So I go cash out. Now I got like almost a grand. And I got to find Justin, right? And I come around the slot machine and the homeboy is fucking cross-eyed, hammered. And he's got, he goes, Ed, man, I don't know if you know this, but they give you free booze if you're gambling. He's like, I panhandled a dollar. I've been playing these nickel slots for 2 hours. He goes, I put a nickel in every time the waitress walks by. So he could get the free booze.
No way.
And I pull out this stack of cash and he was just like, what the fuck? So we end up getting this, we got a room, got a suite, got like a few grams of ecstasy. This is like, they still sold ecstasy and powder back then. And I think we even got a pony keg for the room. we're balling, right? We got a grand, we're fucking balling. And now I'm like, I'm fucked up. It's like 3 a.m. I'm like, I'm going to go back down and gamble some more. Right. I was down to like $400 and I go back downstairs. I make like another $1,200
In
like 4 more hours. And I'm just like, gambling's the shit. Right. This is fucking killer. By the end of that weekend though, like somehow the meth had come around, and I remember being at the show. I didn't go into the shows there, but I went to the lot every day. And, this is the meth part. Someone had given me, like, I was on the lot, and I was really high on acid, and someone gave me a loaded meth pipe. And they're like, hey, do you want this? I don't want it. Someone gave it to me. And I was like, cool. It was like a pookie with a fat load in it. And I was like, I don't know where to go smoke this, right? My fucking van's at the hotel. I got a ride here with someone. So this is Vegas in the summer. So it's like 120 degrees. There's outhouses, right? For like all like the outhouses and the parking lot. And I'm like, yeah, it's private, you know? I'll go in there. And I go in and I call it a shit sauna. It was like,
oh yeah.
It's like it's 120 outside. Inside the porta potty, it's like 135 degrees.
Cooking dookie.
Dude. And I'm in there for 45 minutes just twisting the fucking pipe. No. And there's people banging on the
y'all
door.
I'm like, sweaty and shit?
Oh, like there's not a party that's not sweaty by the end of that. Fuck.
It was so gnarly. I could still, it was so gnarly.
And that Vegas meth, it hits different, you know? There's something about it. Like, somebody told me that they cut it with, did you hear about this or no? I don't know if it was, like, some bullshit or not, but somebody told me they cut it with, like, that they, like, wash it with rocket fuel, you know? Because there's, like, all, like, fucking all the, like, the whatever fucking is in Vegas.
JPL,
yeah.
NASA.
That was the word, you know? That was the word.
I remember they called it, that there was a certain speed they called rocket fuel, yeah.
We used to get, like, the sticky shit back in the 90s. Yeah. It was, like, they call it, it was like peanut butter cake.
Peanut butter.
Yep. You guys had, there's a lot of that in San Diego.
And it was like, you only had to, you'd do a little line, you'd be up for like for 3 days.
Yeah, I remember that shit.
It was gnarly.
Your eyebrow hairs would literally stand up. Literally, you're like, what the fuck is happening to me? And then you feel so gross when it's over.
I mean, the relapse, the you know, I, I've been sober a while now, and I relapsed for one day 7 years ago, and I ended up doing a bunch of meth, and by like the third day I was awake, it was just so gnarly. Like, so gnarly. I was like crying. You know? Like, all my bones hurt.
You gotta tell us
the
relapse story.
You gotta tickle you guys with it.
Yeah.
So I was sober like almost three years at the time, and when I got sober, I found out I had Hep C, Hep B, and cirrhosis.
Yeah. Real one.
You know?
So,
you know, when I was younger, I'd be getting fucked up. My friends would be like, dude, you're going to fucking fuck up your liver. And I'd be like, in my head, I'd be like, or I'd tell them, you know, yeah, but I'll be 70. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
I didn't think I was going to be 36. You know? And so I find out I have this shit, and I do the Hep C treatment. This is back in 2013 or so. So I've got to go in for this liver scan, though. I get cleared of Hep C, and I got to go in for this liver scan. I change my diet. Everything's looking good. And they're like, we got to do an MRI. Like, up until then, they'd done a couple ultrasounds on my liver, but they wanted an MRI. Have you ever done an MRI? Are you claustrophobic? No. I'm like, have you? Yeah.
Oh, I have, yeah.
Gnarly.
You slide that too.
Yeah. And they asked me, they're like, are you claustrophobic? No, I don't think so. And they slide me into that machine, and I freaked out. I start screaming. I'm screaming, get me out of here, right? And so they pull me out, and they're like, you're really claustrophobic. We got to reschedule this with anesthesia. So they reschedule it for 2 weeks away. And 2 days before the appointment, my doctor calls me, who's been treating me for liver disease, knows my whole history. She's like, hey, this is only a 6-minute MRI. Do you want to just try Xanax instead of, like, if we give you anesthesia, you're out all day, and probably the next day too, you're not going to be able to work. And I was like, yeah, I love Xanax. You know, let's try that. So I never really knew about like the milligrams of Xanax. I'd taken it a lot, but like when people, I always took like these little footballs, and I don't know what milligram they were, but people would talk about bars, and I still don't know what that is. And
I can tell you all about it.
She prescribes me 3 milligrams of Xanax, and she's like, take 2 right when you get it in the morning, and then take another like right before the doctor if you need it, but you'll probably won't even need it. So I go to a meeting that morning, share about having some anxiety about taking Xanax and this MRI. My homie Marie, who's like 12 years at the time sober, she drives me. I relapsed right when I got the prescription because I took all 3. I'm like, I'm a big dude, right? And I mean, relapse, right? Like, yeah. I take all 3, and I barely remember getting to the fucking doctor. And I don't remember the MRI at all. And, you know, I don't remember getting dropped off at home. Later on, I asked Marie, I was like, was I fucked up when you dropped me off? She goes, yeah, dude, you were telling me to come in and fuck.
No way.
I was like, well, if you knew I was fucked up, why didn't you come sit with, like, hang out with me? She's like one of my best friends, right? She goes, I just thought you said you were going to sleep it off. It was like those brownout where you get like little flashes of like memories. Mm-hmm. And I remember grabbing my keys and my wallet off my kitchen table. I don't remember driving anywhere. I remember a black hand putting rocks into my hand. I don't remember getting a crack pipe. I don't remember where I was. I couldn't tell you anything, but I came out of this blackout after I hit the crack pipe, right? And I'm like, I took a blast, and I'm like in reality again. I'm like, holy shit, right? I just fucked up almost 3 years of sobriety. Like, what the fuck? Like, it sucked. It was really sucked. And so now I'm like lit though. And there's a half a 20 sitting on my bed next to me. So I'm like, well, might as well finish it, right? I mean, we're here.
Yeah.
And so I finish it, and now I'm fucking lit. I haven't done drugs in almost 3 years, and now I need a beer. So I go to the liquor store, and I get a 6-pack of IPA, because that's what I used to like, IPA and tequila. And I get back to my apartment, and I just down all 6 in like 10 minutes. And now I'm like shit-faced, right? I'm like, fuck, now I want to fuck. So you could still find prostitutes on Craigslist at the time. And so I go on Craigslist. I'm like, I want to find a girl, go meet up with a girl. I couldn't call any of my friends that I would, you know, normally see, because I'm like, I'm fucked up. And I find this girl, and I go to this hotel room, drive over super drunk, and I go in, and she's hitting the pookie. And she's like, you want to hit this? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, we're not right. This is all within like 3 hours of the doctor. So we don't even hook up. I just end up smoking speed with this chick for like 2 hours. And I probably smoke like a gram. And so I go home, and I'm like, well, now what do I, right? Now, this was on a Wednesday. I was on the committee for an AA camp out for that for that Friday. And I was the guy that was supposed to get to San Clemente State Beach early and like be the liaison with the park rangers and shit and give everyone their camping assignments when they got there. So I had all the paperwork for everyone and I'm like, I got to get some sleep, right? So I just spent all night Wednesday night drinking, all day Thursday drinking, all day Thursday night drinking, can't sleep, right? So finally, like Friday morning, I call the homies in the program. I'm like, yo, this is what went down. And they're just laughing at me. They're like, you dumb fuck. Like, what, you know, what are you doing? And they're like, you come to the camp out. I'm like, this is what I was started off by telling you guys. By now, I'm like crying. I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. Like, the depression is hitting. My fucking knees hurt. My feet hurt. My neck. You know, I'm just like, I feel like I'm shriveling up and like I'm a tumbleweed, you know, and it hurts. And so my best friend Tyson's already up at the camp out. He calls my ex and she just shows up at my house and she's like, you shitface, like, get in the fucking car. You're going to the camp out. We're going. And I'm like, all right, well, I need to, you know, so I'm drinking tequila on the way to the camp out. We drive from San Diego to San Clemente and my friend Tyson meets us at the gate and she just bounces. Like, now I'm just stranded at a fucking, I hate camping. I don't know if I've ever told you guys this, but I hate camping. I don't like campfire, the smell, I like a hotel room. And so she drops me off. I'm coming down hard and I'm at this AA camp out and I'm like, you know, everyone's kind of roasting me a little because I've been up for 3 days, and which was good. But there's like gnats. The sun's going down. There's fucking mosquitoes. It was just crazy. And my friend who was calling, he's like, hey, come on up. I got an air mattress. I got a tent for you. I got everything you need. Just come up. So I get there, and immediately the sun's out. There's no trees. I'm like, let me see this tent. Takes me over to this like little Boy Scout two-man tent, and it's got like a raft in it that you use in a pool. You know, like, yeah, like with the little holes in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I crawl in and my legs from my knees down are sticking out of the tent. And they're getting sunburned because I'm so tall, right? And it's like a little kid. This is like a child tent that he has for me. It was brutal. And then I'm there for like the meeting around the bonfire. And then I got a ride home that night. That was my last use. Like, I've been sober ever since then. That's
one of my favorite fucking relapse stories ever. Dude, it's so good.
I'm so grateful that it was like, that's all, you know, that's all it was. No. That's all it was. And I sponsored a couple dudes at the time and they stayed with me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's great.
I felt like it was like, I don't know. It was, my sponsor was even, you don't even have to count that if you don't want, because the doctor did. I'm like, nah, I took all, when I really thought about it, it's like, I took all three Xanax.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to, you know?
Yeah. It's one of those things where some of us could be like, well, it was, you know, like, yeah, I'm the same. I come from the same fucking school. Like, you know, if I ain't doing it, how I'm supposed to fucking be doing it, then,
yeah,
you know, it's just opening a fucking door for a whole bunch of other weird shit, you know? You ever, you go to, you have you been back to Dead Show Sober?
I went... No.
To answer the short answer, no.
I did, like, a couple years ago, I went to the Hollywood Bowl when they were here, and I went to the parking lot just to, like, scope it out, and I was like, it's kind of whack. I mean, to me now, like, I'm sure it's really fun for people that are into it, but it's definitely, like, different, and it's, like, it seemed way sketchier, way smaller.
Now it seems,
Yeah.
Well, now it's weird because, like, dude, like, Nitrous Mafia and all these people, like, it's like, dude, there's like, it's like hood-ass motherfuckers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Miracle tickets are fucking scalped, you know? Like, there ain't no, like, it ain't the fucking same, you know? And I never saw Jerry. Like, I never got to fucking see Jerry, but I, like, you know, like, I saw, like, Further and fucking Phil and Friends and, like, I saw The Dead, but I never saw, like, actually, you know, like, I was fucking 10 years old. Like, you know, I barely spoke any English when fucking Jerry passed away, you know? So I sure as hell wasn't going to any shows, you know?
Yeah, it's a trip. I didn't even, so, you know, once he died, it was just like, I just thought that whole scene ended to me, you know? It was like, oh, tour's over. And I got into going to raves because by that time I had these really good connections for drugs. And so I ended up like 95, 96, 97, 98. I was going to a lot of raves all over Southern California and selling acid and mushrooms and whatever. And but like, man, I loved Dead Tour was fun. And it was just like this really beautiful thing of like, it was like chaotic, so chaotic, but really beautiful at the same time. Like I never, it was, I think it's also part of being like a teenager. Like you don't really care about anything. Like yeah. you don't have a worry to begin with looking back on it, but shit just always kind of worked out, you know? And I would, my mom would probably send me, I would say if you average it out, like my van broke down and needed an alternator, right? So she would pay, you know, over the phone with a credit card, she'd give me a new alternator or whatever. Like I definitely can't play down the fact that like over those years, mom put some money into like me fucking not being at home, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'd be stuck in like, I mean, you run out of money in fucking Mississippi, like, and you're trying to panhandle looking like a fucking hippie kid, you're not getting anything, you know? Right. So it'd be like, mom, I need fucking 150, Western Union me 150 bucks so I can get the fuck out of Mississippi, please. And she would, you know? And like thinking about that now and what, you know, I talked to my mom about this, I think over last Christmas, and she goes, I was so fucking happy when that motherfucker died because I knew you were coming home.
No way.
Yeah. She goes, I prayed every fucking night that Jerry Garcia would die.
No way.
Yeah.
Is that what happened? That's why you stopped following him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
And it was like, it, you know, I don't know what, I can't imagine what I must have put my family through at that age, because I was young. I yeah. had just turned 17. And then just to be, and there was no cell phones back then.
Right.
So like, I wouldn't talk to her sometimes for like 2-3 months at a time. You know, it would be like, I'm just out in the ether somewhere.
But it was mostly fun, right?
So much fun. I mean, yeah.
So then it started going dark after Jerry died?
Well, it was like, those last couple, I was only on, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, there's a documentary that came out called Long Strange Trip, and it's on Netflix. It's like a 12-hour thing. And I watched the whole thing a couple years ago when it came out. And in the last episode, they talk about all of these like white middle-class deadhead kids that showed up in the early 90s and just kind of ruined everything and just were chaotic and not respecting the vibe or the culture and were just there for the drugs. And I was like, gate crashing and flipping over cop cars and starting riots. And I was like, oh, that was me. And I remember like, one time I was really drunk and I'm passed out on some grass and I've got a nitrous balloon in one hand and this girl I knew named Rain comes over and like in my face, she goes, you're fucking ruining it for everyone. Like the real hippies hated fucking nitrous. Like those true deadheads were like, fuck nitrous. Like they weren't down for alcohol. Like I hung out with alcoholics that would get in fights, break shit. You know, dudes fucking hitting each other over the head with shit. It was just like, it was really chaotic, but also like really beautiful. And a lot. Like, I mean, the kindness that you would see from people and like the, like I said, you could always depend on a place to stay, food. Like if you were asked out, like there was always someone there to like reach out and like help you up, you know?
The hippies.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that, I was one of them. There was like us. We called them the peace loving granola hippies. That's what we called them. And they called us the swingers because we sold drugs. It was like this, it's probably like 200 or 300 of us. And we all sold drugs and we all hung out together and most of us skated. I had this van, right? I had this Volkswagen van and it was the first, I look back now and I'm like, it was karma. It was the first time I'd done heroin. One of my friends that rode with us was a junkie. His name was Mark, and he would always, you know, be shooting up in my car. All my friends in San Diego by this time, like all my friends in San Diego were skaters that listened to Nirvana, and everyone shot heroin, you know, by the time we were like 16, 17. And Mark is on tour with me, and he's traveling. It's me and Justin, the dude from Tennessee, and what was the other dude's name? Mark's homie Ross, who's a drunk but hates heroin. And they're best friends, and they'd always get in fights and shit, and so the first time I do heroin, I'm like, I'm trying to find Mark. I go back to the van. Mark's got the weed, right? Mark's got a couple pounds. And so we're selling weed on Hay Street up in San Francisco. And we're parked. I can't remember the name of the park. But Ross is at the van. And I'm like, hey, where's Mark? He's like up in the trees. He's up there fucking doing his thing. So I go find him. And right then he's like pulling out an issue, you know, into the syringe. And he's like, he's always offering it to me. And I don't know why that day, but I was like, fuck it, I'll do this. And I remember walking halfway down this hill of grass and just being like, I think I'm just gonna lay down here for a minute, right? And I laid down face first in this grass and started throwing up, And I fucking loved it. And I was like, in my head, I was like, I'm puking chunks of joy right now.
Wait, what, is that the People's Park? Is that what it was?
No, this was at the top of Lower Haight, right when you go up the hill to Upper mm-hmm. Haight on the left-hand side. That I can't remember. It's that park that goes over the hill, and the other side is the Castro. That.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly, yeah.
Right at the beginning of Upper Haight Street. Hmm. I can't remember the name of it. It's been a long, I mean, shit, this is 25 years ago, 20 years ago.
Is that when everything started going wrong, when you started fucking with the heroin?
Yeah.
With the heroin.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was, I was always like, give me whatever. But all of Dead Tour at that time, there was dudes, there was undercover DEA on tour. There was a lot of people dying of, there was heroin overdoses at every show.
Really?
I mean, it was the early 90s. The heroin was fucking everywhere. And I knew people that were dying once a week on tour. And the rumor was that Jerry, when he died, was checked into a rehab for heroin, died detoxing of a heart attack. Like, that was like the rumor at the time, or that what we heard, you know.
How did he die? Wasn't it an overdose or no? Was it?
He was in rehab. He had a heart attack.
Really?
But the rumor was that, like, he was strung out and he was trying to get clean again and fucking had a heart attack.
Somebody told me they, my homie, fuck, it's funny because he just tried to call me. He's the dude that kind of put me onto, like, you know, like way later on. He's the dude when I started making edibles. He was the dude that I like fucking worked under. I was his understudy, you know, and he took us to like, I think that's when like Further was touring, and he took us to see them. And then he like took us to Reggae on the River and all these festivals, you know, and like Street Scene. And because he was kind of like, dude, you might know him, Chris Bliss.
No,
I bet you know, because he's like a San Diego dude, you know.
That's a familiar name.
Yeah, he's like a San Diego dude. He made edibles, whatever, you know. But I was just talking to him, and he goes, you know, he's like all those guys, you know, he's like, they're all junkies, like, you know, he's like, yeah, go see him while John's still alive, because he's strung out now. Him and Bobby, they're all, you know, they're all just gonna be fucking dying soon of overdoses anyway. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what the fuck? He goes, I mean, everybody knows, you know, like everybody knows it already. I'm like, dude, you're fucking out of your goddamn mind. Well, I just ran into him at that Rolling Stone show I went to a few weeks ago.
My friend J-Cat, the dude that dosed me in Boston, I don't remember what city we were in, but he came back to our room and he was like almost crying. I guess he'd been on a lot of acid, had found out what room Jerry was staying in, and like went to go knock on his door and be like, I love you, or whatever the fuck you're going to do when you're high on acid and meet Jerry Garcia, right? Pounds on his door like 1 a.m. Jerry answers it in his fucking underwear and screams at him, get the fuck out of here, you fucking dumb motherfucker, and slams the door in his face. And now my friend's high on acid crying. he shows up back at the hotel room like, Jerry's an asshole. So that day, though, that I first did heroin, later that night, we're at the Easy 8 Motel in Oakland, and we'd always stay at the Easy 8 because back then it was like $40. And you split that with like four dudes, and it's like, you know, $10 a person. I'm kind of nodded out. I'm on the floor, and Justin comes in with his crazy hillbilly accent. And he's like, Ed, man, Ed, your van's on fire. And I'm like, what are you fucking talking? Get out of here. I thought he was fucking with me. And he's like, no, man, for real. Your van is on fire. Get out here. And I get up and I walk outside and I look over at my van parked over there in the parking lot. The car next to mine, the whole interior was engulfed in flames. And just the paint along the top edge of my van was on fire, like little tiny 2-inch flames. And I just remember going, fuck. And right when I said that, the gas tank of the car next to mine blows up, right? And the whole car is just, it's like from the movies. It sends this huge fireball through my van, blows out all the windows on one side, lights the interior of my van on fire. And the fire department shows up like 2 minutes after that. So the inside of my van's on fire for like 2-3 minutes. The fire department was already on the way because of the other car. So it's like the cops get there and they're like, yeah, this car was used in an armed robbery. They parked it here and then like lit the inside on fire. Excuse me. And
the one next to you, not
the one next to me. So the cop's like, hey, can you see if your car runs? We need to use this for our investigation, this parking spot. And so I jump in. Dude, it was gnarly. It was like, because they put it, you know, it's full of like burnt plastic ash mixed with water. So it was like 3 inches of like plastic burned mud. Like it was just the gnarliest smell. It's like if you just lit a wig on fire and like hotboxed it, you know, it was like so bad. And it still ran though. Like the stereo knobs were like drooping down. Like,
no way.
Like they were drooping down like 2 inches. And so I go park it And this fucking thing is like like the next morning we go and it's gone. And they had called it an abandoned vehicle. Getting this van back was a whole nother fucking story. Like that, it was like the whole next day. Like we couldn't get it. Impound wouldn't give it to us. I mean, I'm coming off this fucking heroin high and like hungover, and it's like middle of summer in Oakland and it's fucking hot. We got a dog and we're like taking the bus and trying to get this car out of impound and having to go get a voucher from the police department. The guy that did the report's not there and he's not coming until the night. It was just like a nightmare, right? Yeah, we finally like parked our asses in the police station, these four smelly, stinky kids. And we're like, we're not leaving until we get this voucher for the tow lot. The tow lot went up $500. And I'm like, your cop told me to park it there. So we get this van back, and the outside, it looked like it had been like in the Middle East. Like the whole side of it was black. All the windows on that side were missing. The whole interior was burned. Like it was just exposed metal on the ceiling, like black. Everything in there was black. Everyone on tour started calling me Char. So I went from Big Ed to Char after that.
You drove that thing.
It fucking drove for another year.
No way. Wow. It's all fucked up and burnt.
Dude, it was so gnarly. We were driving through a fucking blizzard in Colorado one time, and the we're a Volkswagen van. A blizzard is already blowing you all over the freeway, you know, when the wind blows. And Justin's in the back, like trying to duct tape a tarp to the windows from the inside. And every time he'd almost get it, like a gust of wind would come and just blow it out. Like it was crazy.
So you never got windows on it again, like actual windows.
Never, no. Oh, yeah. But so. We got this van, right? And we're in San Francisco, and the van's gnarly. And I got Ross, who is the drunk. I got Mark, the junkie. And then now I've picked up this dude, Petey, too. And Petey's like one dreadlock out of the side of his head, missing like half his teeth, like bleach stains over all his clothes, because he will shoot up like any drug you fucking get him. Like he was trying to shoot up Valium, you know? Like just like the gnarliest dude sounded. Like those dudes that have like whiskey voices, but he was like 25 and he'd be like, talk like this, you know?
Yeah.
And Petey loved crack cocaine. And so I got the five of us. We're leaving a Jerry show at the Warfield in San Francisco, and we're supposed to be driving down to our friend's house in Santa Cruz. And the middle seats of the van had been removed. So it's just like a floor in the middle. And then you got the bench seat that's half burned, but it's like covered with blankets now so you can sit across it. The van smelled for the whole year I had it after that. It reeked like burnt plastic. Like it was gnarly. We're
just no stereo.
Had a boombox on the dash, you know, all this like graffiti on the inside now. And like, it was just gnarly. Yeah. And we're walking back to the van after the show, and like these three piece loving granola kids are like, hey, you guys going to Santa Cruz? And we're like, yeah, we're going to Santa. You guys need a ride? And they're like, yeah, yeah. So like one of the dudes, they all have dreadlocks, you know, they all got like homemade clothes and shit. One's like got a guitar, one has bongos, and we're like, we don't have a seat in the middle, but you can sit on the floor. So we're driving, it's like an hour and a half or so down the one from San Francisco to Santa Cruz. And we're coming down the hill into Pacifica, and Petey, the fucking crusty dude, is just like, stop over at the Safeway, you know, and I'm high on acid. I'm like really fucking lit right now. I'm on like 10, 15 hits. And so we go into Safeway, and Petey's like, come in with me. And I'm like, okay. So I go in, and I'm like, you know, when you're on acid and you walk into somewhere that's brightly lit, like 7-Eleven, you're just like, you don't realize how high you are until you're like, understand. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, this is gnarly. And I get these, he hands me these like 2/5, and I put them in each pocket, and he's like trying to get me to come steal more with them. And I'm like, I'm out of here, dude. Like I'm going out to the car. So we get out to the car, and we've got like 3/5 of alcohol and like some donuts, and we get back on the road, and we're open up the bottles and we're passing them around. We offer them to these three kids, and they're like, no thanks, bro. We all ate mushrooms tonight. We don't really drink, or like, we're all organic, you know? And we're like, cool, like whatever. And these are like some of the, like, the craziest dudes on tour. And as soon as they're drunk, Mark and Ross are fighting. You know, they always get in fights because Mark's a junkie and Ross hates it, right? So they're like screaming in the back seat at each other. I'm on acid. There's like Slayer blasting from the fucking stereo. And these fucking kids are just on the floor like, what the fuck? Like, like they didn't know who they got to ride with, right? And so Mark and Ross are screaming at each other. And I finally turn around and I just scream like, you motherfuckers, stop screaming or we're going to pull over and you're going to get the fuck out and walk, right? Now I'm screaming. Everyone's screaming. Settles down for a little while, And by this point, like, these hippies had, like, one had, like, turned the guitar upside down and was, like, playing the back of it like a drum, and the other one had the bongos, and they had this, like, tiny little miniature drum circle in the middle of my van where you could tell they were just, like, trying to, like, tune out, yeah. right? They're, like, just trying to not be there, whatever that took. And so Mark and Ross start fighting again. I'm like, Justin, pull over. And he pulls over, and they're fighting. They get into a fist fight, and they're going at it. They're squaring up, and Mark grabs a skateboard, or Chris Ross grabs a skateboard out of the car. Mark grabs a skateboard, hits Ross in the face with the trucks.
Fuck.
As hard as he can. And I'm on acid, and this, like, I just, the sun's starting to come up. It's like 5 a.m. There's just like, I remember blood, like slow motion in the sky, like to the sunrise. And I was just like, fuck, right? This is gnarly. And the fire department, highway patrol, they all come. They got to take Ross to the fucking hospital with a, he's got like 30 or 40 stitches in his face. And, you know, Mark's over there apologizing, crying. I'm so sorry. I love you. I don't know why I did, you know, drunk dudes. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, we're 45 minutes from Santa Cruz, and these, you know, the cops leave. They ask us what went on. We're like, we don't know. We didn't see anything. And they bounce, and I'm like, okay, it's time to go. And now it's like 6:30 in the morning, and we're getting in the car, and I look at these three kids, and they're like 20 yards away. And I'm like, you guys coming? And they were, they just look horrified. Like they were fucking like eyes wide, just, and the one of them just goes shaking his head, and he's like, no, bro, I think we're just going to stay here. And we were like in the middle of nowhere. We're like, oh,
that's how Ed got loaded. They're like, fuck it. Well, yeah. We'll take our chances. Like, yeah. Fuck.
Like, no, we're going to stay here.
What's your worst meth story?
I don't know. I mean, they're all, I don't know about, they're like all kind of bad, but not real bad. You know? Like none of my, I don't know. Meth was always, dude, this guy named Bill, who was an acid dealer, decided he wanted to try cooking meth. And so he gave me like some of the first batches, you know, and he's like, try this one. It was like blue.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So I shot it, you know, I shot like a quarter gram. And I remember like I didn't feel anything, and I was like, that's weird, I don't feel anything. And I fucking went to bed, and I woke up 4 hours later so fucking high for like 2 days, and it was like the craziest. Like I shot it and I went to sleep like an hour later for like 4 hours, and it was like time released, you know.
Fuck.
It was so weird.
That's weird.
Okay, this is a good meth story. My friend, this is after Dead Tour, and we're like doing the we're moving acid and meth in between San Diego and San Francisco, not a lot, like an ounce here and there, like quarter pound or whatever, and sheets, 10 sheets at a time. And so my friend, shout out to AF too, if any of you guys hear this, dude, AF is all the homies, always fucking, always fighting, always faded. That was like all the San Diego dudes I grew up with. And my homie Matt just passed away, like, I think about 4 months ago, another one. That's like three dudes from AF have died this year.
OD'd?
Yeah.
What was it? AF was like a party crew, or what?
It was like tag, skate, punk, hippie, grunge thing that was like, everyone was, there was like about half of us were like kind of violent, not me, but like it was just like this crew of like skateboarders that kind of ran Mission Beach in the early 90s. It was like all the Mission Beach skaters, and we were just all like broken homes, drugs, you know. It's just a crew. It was just like the crew,
you know. It's a trip. When I was 15, I started a crew called SND, which was Still Not Dead, you know. Fucking Chris had it blasted on his stomach, a bunch of us had it tatted, you know. And like, now I'm like, I think I'm the last, my homie Nico that's got fucking 10 days sober right now, just called me from some crazy sober living or treatment center. Shout out Nico, you know. I think me and him are the last two that are like alive that's still fucking, you know, like out of everybody, you know. But SND, we clicked up with a crew in North Hollywood that was called AS, that was always stoned or antisocial. And it was kind of like same shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, That's I had an AF tattoo. I've got it covered up because it was so bad. I mean, it was like, do you rep this or do you? No, it looks like someone drew it on with a ballpoint pen 40 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, it was like, nah, I can cover that one up. So I was this dude. Who was I with? Jason Fisher. Who the last time I saw him, he was on the trolley in San Diego getting out of prison, and this is like 2002. And this dude grew up. He was a kickboxer, sponsored kickboxer, and he worked at Hamill's, the skate shop down in Mission Beach, for years. And whenever anyone would like steal, like you did not want to steal from Hamill's because they'd sick Jason on you. And I would watch that dude beat guys down the block, like full karate style, like, but for like a block at a time while they're trying to run away. And he's like doing like full like leg sweeps and shit.
Roundhouse.
Like to the head. Yeah, roundhouse sport? To the head. Yeah. Like it was so wild. And like a lot of those dudes could fight. And, but I'm with Jason and, my friend John, who was from another graffiti crew down there, Warehouse Martians. And, it was like a rave graffiti crew. And we had a lot of speed. I think Jason had like an ounce or something. And he's like, you guys want to come to San Francisco with me? And, so John's got this, like, I think it was like a Suzuki Samurai or a Geo Tracker. It was one of those two, you know, they're like the same car.
Yeah.
And so we're sleeping in this fucking tracker like the first couple nights. And the story's like not, it's more about this girl, Carolyn, that I meet, right? And this fucking poor thing. I meet this girl on Haight Street in San Francisco and I just bump into her and I'm like, you're beautiful. Like, can I get your number? And she's like, no, you're like dirty and gross. Leave me alone, right? And a couple nights later, I run into her at a rave and I've got drugs and she's like, oh, so I give her a little speed. She gives me some Molly and some ecstasy. And we're like, we just start vibing right then. She doesn't know like how deep it runs on my side, you know? And she's like, so we spend that night together. In the morning, she's like, come over to my house. She's staying in an all girls. She's a freshman at Berkeley. And she's staying in an all girls house in San Francisco that's Mormon. She grew up like strict Mormon from Utah. And I found this out later. She'd only been with one dude, you know? And so she has me climb in on the fire escape. You know, I got to hop up on the fucking dumpster, hop up to the fire escape, climb up to the second story, go in her room. And we're hooking up and this girl walks in and she's like, hey, what are you doing? And she's like, I know you're not having sex, you know, because this chick never did. And I was like, oh man, what am I getting into? And so we proceed to like get really strung out on meth and I think heroin too. It was gnarly. But this girl, so for about 2 or 3 months we're running back and forth between San Francisco and San Diego, and her parents are she's supposedly like her parents are sending her money, her allowance or whatever, and we would get it from her her roommates. And we drive, like, we're in San Diego, and she calls her roommates, and she's like, is my check there yet? And they're like, no, your check's not here. And she's like, fuck, I don't know. And she's like, you know, she would just do speed and just draw. Like, that's all, she was one of those ones. You know, just sit in the corner and draw for, like, 10 hours at a time until the whole page is black.
That was me. That was
at first. You're like, I need to fill in that little white spot right there.
Where it's, like, ripping through the pad, you know? It's coming out to find, like, 10 sheets later, you know?
She's like, let's go up there. Or no, her roommate's like, yeah, finally her roommate's like, yeah, your check's here. So we drive up to San Francisco. It's like 8 or 9 hours from San Diego. And we pull in and there's like a rental car in the driveway. And I'm there with my friend John's driving, right? And he's in this like Geo Tracker. And we pull in and like her dad walks out the front door. And she's like, go, go, go. Right. So we get into a fucking car, high speed car chase. We haven't slept in like 3 or 4 days. And we got like a mad Mormon dad chasing us down in like rental Taurus, you know? And we're like flying over islands. And like, I mean, it was crazy. And like, she's crying and she's like, faster. And finally, I think like reality finally hit her. And she was like, wait, just stop. I've got to get out of the car. And like, she just got out. That was the last I ever saw her. She got her dad. She left all her shit in the car. She wrote me a letter from about 6 months later. What's that really big rehab, that prestigious one out in Minnesota?
Hazleton.
Hazleton. I get this letter from Hazleton. And she's like, I really love you, but I think I have to like not see you anymore because I'm trying to be sober. But dude, and I mean, I didn't even know that she was Mormon. I didn't know like any of the details about her. I mean, I felt bad for that one. I had to make an amends on that one.
She's still sober?
That was a long time ago. That was 20 years ago, probably. But that was meth.
That's that a was good meth. One. What'd you end up going to prison for?
Oh, man. I was in drug court. I told you guys before we started recording about, you know, I got put into drug, you know, fuck, man, in the 90s, they weren't letting you go to AA meetings for, you know, grams of heroin like they do now. Yeah. You know, back then it was like,
now they don't fucking arrest you for grams of heroin. Nothing to shooting up in the streets, you know?
I mean, I caught a felony for a dirty spoon one time. And
wow.
And the judge said, this is a usable amount. Like, that's all it had to be. I mean, I got arrested for a match head of cocaine one time. Like, I had bought it 20 and shot half and had half left. And it was like maybe two match heads of cocaine. You know, it was like a dime bag of coke felony. So
fuck.
I was just collecting felonies for like all this dumb shit. And then I got put into drug court and I made it through. By that time, I'd like maxed out county time, you know, and then they were going to give me, I had like a 2-year joint suspension for another possession charge and I had like petty theft. And then I don't know how it is now, but back then your second petty theft is a felony.
Right.
So like the first one was a misdemeanor. It's like a ticket. And if you get any after that, but that was my hustle. Once I really got after Dead Tour and after dealing drugs, like, you know, by the mid to late 90s, it was just boosting. Like that turned into my get down.
Yeah.
Like for a long time. And so it was like petty thefts, receiving stolen property. I had possession of a stolen vehicle. Like my friend, I ended up with 3 stolen cars. You know, I never stole a car, but yeah. I would get my, like one time my friend Jovan calls me in the morning. He goes, Ed, I think I got this car from a party last night. You want it? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I didn't want to walk home. So I just saw some keys and like used the alarm and found this Jeep and it's in my driveway and I don't know whose it is. And I was like, yeah, I'll take it.
No way.
So I drove it for like 6 months.
And got busted in it?
With the plates just that.
Yeah. Well, they don't, unless, dude, and the cop was like, you know, dumbass, the only reason I pulled you over is because you're fucking, I had my leg out the window, like kicked up out the window. My foot was up by the rearview mirror. And he's like, that's the only reason you got pulled over.
Wow.
Fuck.
Yeah, prison sucked. Prison sucked. That was like a whole thing. I don't know. It was like, how long is this
thing? Fuck, however long we want.
Yeah.
Oh,
you ever smoke PCP?
I love that you guys always ask this question. I knew you were going to ask this question. I knew this one was on the table.
That's like, I smoked some last night.
I'm on PCP right now, actually. twice, maybe 3 times. Once, you know. But I remember the first time in the 90s, there was like a lot of crossover with hip-hop and the rave scene, the underground warehouse scene in San Diego. And I had a lot of friends that were into hip-hop and they take me to this warehouse party and I'm the only white guy out of like 300 people. And I'm standing there with these essays and they're like, hey, you want to hit this? And I'm like, yeah, I thought it was just a joint. Right. So I hit it as it's going around the circle. I hit it like 3 or 4 times. Then like 5 minutes, the whole room got pitch black and everybody's eyes turned into like red slits, like demon eyes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to get killed tonight. Because I'm white. it was gnarly. And I went and found my friend. I'm like, I think I smoked something. It's not weed. He's like, yeah, you probably smoke water, dummy.
Oh, I'm like, fuck.
And the other time, you know, it wore off or whatever.
And this is like when like Raver, like when it was all like fucking like rave crews and shit, huh? Like,
oh yeah. Dance battles.
Yeah.
Nitrous tanks. I mean, I think that still.
They would have dance battles at raves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, doing all that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, different crews. Yeah. Dude, it was cool. They did that shit in my junior high. Like, I went to Bancroft, and there was, like, fools that would be battling fucking, you know.
But it was, like, it was usually, with my experience with the battles, it was usually friends just trying to outdo each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just clowning each other. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun.
Like grabbing each other's balls and shit. Not like physically, but you know, like playing like.
I don't know what kind of crews you ran with.
You ever seen a ghost, Ed?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Wait, are you guys going?
Are we jumping the other PCP story?
Oh no, sorry.
Are we taking a paranormal turn now? It's all paranormal. Can I hit this in here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
hell yeah. So the second PCP story. This is a, my last. So I got sober for the first time in 2004, and you know that's when I haven't been back to prison since. I haven't. I think I relapsed for 3.5 years, but I was sober almost 3 years, and what was I talking about? Oh, that relapse, right? I stayed out 3.5 years. I got sober the first time in 04 until 08, and I got sober again in 2012. And for that 3.5 year relapse, I was doing crack, Xanax, and alcohol. And in my head, it was like, cool, because I wasn't getting busted. I wasn't going to jail. I had a girlfriend. I wasn't putting a needle in my arm. But it was like the same. I mean, it was gnarly. It was so gnarly. And especially, I got really into crack. And I used to drive this dude Lafayette around, right? He was a crack dealer without a car. And he was a Crip. And that there's so many stories just from those couple of years, you know? But one of them, I got two that are kind of tied together. So he used to smoke water all the time. And I'd be driving him around to sell crack. And we would show up to, and there would be like a customer would hop in the back seat. And he's like, knotted out on this shit, can't even get in his pocket, like has no motor control, right? And I'm just like, I would tell the dude, come back in a half hour, we're going to sit here, right? Until Lafayette got his shit together. So one time where he had a cigarette, and he smoked it around me a lot, and I was like, nah, I don't really want to, you know, I had that experience back in the 90s at the rave. I'm cool, you know? And I don't know why, this one day I was really drunk, and I'm driving, and he's like, you want to hit it? And I'm like, yeah, fuck it, right? So I hit it while I'm driving. And I smoke like half this cigarette. And as we're getting onto the on-ramp of the freeway, it hits me. And right when we pull onto the freeway, I'm like, I got to park. And he goes, I don't know how much crack he had on or whatever, but he's like, dude, you can't park here. I'm like, I got to park. So I pulled over on the side of the freeway, probably an hour, and just fucking sat. And like, he was like, fuck it. And he just like...
No way.
Like he fucking blitzed himself into outer space because he didn't want to deal with the fact that we're on the side of the freeway and his pockets were full of drugs. And I'm just like, okay, this guy has to wear off before I go anywhere. So that was the other time I smoked it.
Fuck.
But my other experience with it that was kind of probably one of the scariest things that I've ever had happen to me. You know, I'm like a pretty outgoing individual. Even when I was getting loaded, I'm happy I can fucking talk to anyone and kind of fit in with anyone. But this dude Lafayette, he was a Crip and he was older. He was probably in his like early 40s or something. And I was in my late 20s at the time. And, but he would take me, you guys remember Fred Loya Insurance? Mm-hmm. Did they have that up here?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I don't know if they all were fronts, but this one, like, he's like, let's go over to the clubhouse. And the first time he took me there, it was like Fred Loya Insurance on the outside and it's in the hood in San Diego. And I'm like, fuck is this? And we go in and it's a Crip biker clubhouse. And there's like a pool table and a bar and a fucking stripper pole in the front, you know, and they're not selling insurance anymore. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like all patched up Crips that are like, have all their fucking Harleys parked out front. And these dudes are like in their 50s, you know, they're just all the old school dudes. And there's, you know, we would go over there sometimes and just fucking hang out and drink and whatever. And one night we're over there, and there was a couple dudes that were smoking shirt and I had never met them before. Right. And I'm like, sometimes the only white guy these dudes would see for like, I mean, I wouldn't see another white person for weeks sometimes. I mean, I'm like in Southeast San Diego, Shelltown, National City, like I'm in like the hood part. It would be like me just chilling in Watts, you know, for a month at a time. And, so these two dudes are fucking smoking sherm and I'm just minding my business. You know, and this dude pulls out a gun and puts it to my forehead and it's like, who the fuck is this white boy?
Fuck.
Like after he fucking hits the shit and Lafayette comes around, it's like, no, that's my fucking, and they start yelling at each other. Why the fuck is this white boy in here? What the fuck? Who the fuck is this? And it was like, it was tense. Fuck. Right. And I got a gun pointed at me and they're fucking fighting and he's trying to tell him, no, he's cool. It's fucking, you know, it was scary.
That's awful. Fuck.
And that same place, one time I was giving Lafayette's cousin a ride out of there. And I'm giving him a ride to his house and we pull out and we pull onto the freeway and I get red lighted and there's like 25 cop cars and a helicopter. I mean, they hemmed us up. They hog tied me before they even asked me a question. So They let us both go, but they were like, yeah, there's gun trafficking going on out of that fucking spot.
Fuck.
Yeah.
The Fred Loy insurance?
Yeah. So they checked my whole, you know, they ran through my whole car. They ran my name. They ran his name. He had some weed on him, but had a medical card at the time. You know, this is like 2011, but I was like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was wild.
Tell us about the ghost.
Oh, the guy. I was just a little kid. I was like in the, we had, dude, I grew up in this house. My mom went to find out when it was built, and there was no record of it at the county clerk's office. So it was like late 1800s, probably. Like it was old. It was old as shit. And as a little kid, I was probably like 5 or 6, and I sat up in bed, and I had this like really weird feeling, like the hair was kind of standing up on my neck. And I looked into the hallway, and there was a woman in a white dress and a dude in a sailor outfit, but like goat, like apparitions. And they floated towards each other down the hall, and when they met, they disappeared.
Fuck.
And that's like the...
That's a makes sense. That's sailor a, in San Diego?
Yeah. That's the only time I've seen a ghost.
That's good.
That's the only time you need to see a ghost.
I had this fucking... So one time I do this... I go on this acid trip, and then... It was kind of like this weird, I was on a lot at that time. I remember it was one of those ones where you can't tell who people are. They just look like skeletons. And like full cartoon land, everything's tie-dyed, made out of bones, whatever. And after that, though, every time I'd smoke weed, I would hear a chorus of electronic voices that would say, "We're coming for you, Ed. We're coming for you, Ed. We're coming for you, Ed." But it was sounded like 100 robots in a high-pitched, like mechanical voices. Every time I'd hit smoke weed. So, like, I would wait like a week. I'd be like, okay, I can't smoke weed anymore, right? That's gnarly. Because it would be there the whole time I was high for like 2 hours until the weed wore off. And it was terrifying. And so I'd wait like another, you know, 3 or 4 days. I wanted to get high, right? I'm used to smoking weed every day. So I'd wait 2 or 3 days. I'd take a hit and it would happen again. And it went on for like 3 months.
No way.
It was fucking scary. I was like, is this just going to be my life now? Every time I... smoke weed, I hear these fucking crazy alien robot voices saying they're coming for me.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I had a weird thing happen where kind of, I don't know why this fucking reminded me of it, but when I was like 15 and I first started doing, when I was like 14, 15, I first started doing meth and I was just snorting a lot of it. And I lived with my mom and my stepdad and we had this little spot kind of like in Miracle Mile, you know? And I would go, we had like a garage in the back and I would, and this is back when I was in my like, real, I was like tagging a lot, you know, and it was right before I ran away from home and I was like with that crew over here. But I would just sit there all night, like sketching and like going over, like, you know, like working on my pieces and my bombs and shit, you know. But I had a thing because I was always a big stoner and like it's very rare that like through very consistently until literally the fucking day that I got sober, July 9th, 2015, I smoked fucking weed. I ate fucking weed. I didn't give a fuck. You know, I smoked the fucking hash, the hash oil, the keef, the fucking. Whatever, like it, whatever it was, you know, like I loved that, like I loved it. I, you know, I always had a bong, I always had this, I always had the stuff, you know, like I mean, at one, like we smoked that fucking blunt that was cut with every fucking drug that we dipped in PCP, like that, you know, I didn't give, like I loved smoking weed, but I had a thing happen where when I would smoke it, it happened like for the first time, like where I would like, I was like tweaking hard, you know, I didn't want to be in the house because of like, I didn't want to be in the house because my mom, my stepdad are sleeping in the room over. I think it was right around the time my brother was born or maybe right before he was born. And I would go into the garage and I would like be like, all right, I'm just going to fucking, you know, like I'm just going to go back here and I'm going to smoke a little, like I'll take a bong grip, you know, because I didn't want to wake them up because I'm fucking tweaking. I've been up for God knows how many days, you know? And so I'd go back there and I would like, I'd be awake for 3, 4, 5 days. I'm fucking malnutrition, you know, and I would take a bong grip. And what would happen is I would fucking faint. Like I would pass out, you know, and then I would come to on the floor and I'd be like, fuck, you know, and the bong, thank God the bong never broke. But it happened for like months, you know, and I couldn't stop. I still wanted to smoke the weed. I still wanted to keep doing the speed, you know. And then I kind of just broke through it, you know.
Dude, it's scary when that kind of shit happens. I OD'd a couple times on cocaine. I didn't die or, you know, but I knew like your heart starts to seize up and you just taste it and you just had to run cold water on your head for like 30 minutes while you're like trying to fucking breathe.
That's like Mishko, you know, that shit happened to him.
Yeah.
Shooting cocaine. I shot cocaine and heroin. Like I didn't do just heroin. I shot speedballs and for, I don't know how many years, 9 years, I think about 8 or 9 years. And that was what I did. Wow. And, anytime I was in San Diego, it was crazy, dude. Our hustle, like I'm doing, I don't know. We were thieves, but I I swear that the Mach 3 razor blades are under lock and key now because of me and my friends back then. We had these fences that would take, I had these Korean fences that would take 501 jeans for $10 a pair. They would take fifths of good alcohol for $5 and handles for $10. They would take any Oil Valet products for like $5 a box and Mach 3 razor blades, and they'd take the 8-pack for $4. So we would just hit, we'd go to like Rite Aid, CVS, and just all of them, take all the blades. And I mean, you get 100 packs of blades, it's $400.
That's great.
So that was like the hustle for a long time. And back then, CDs too. You could sell like a new CD at like used music stores for like $5 if you had a new one.
Yeah.
So we would go to like the warehouse or Sam Goody, and I would usually go in and someone would have the car by the side because they all had emergency exits. You know, it was like, don't use this door, the alarm will go off. Well, I would go through and pick out all the shit that I knew was worth something and make a stack of like 20 by that door. And once I got my stack, I would just grab it and walk out the door, be in the car and gone. And by the time they're even, you know, they're like, why is the alarm going off? We're already, you know, to the next street.
Yeah. Fuck.
That's how we did that.
You do the store credit shit too or no?
No, once Home Depot went from cash to store credit, we just stopped. It was like, that's too fucking much hassle.
Yeah.
You know, I see those poor bastards out there now, like, hey, I got this gift card and this receipt. I'm like, I don't know, man.
Dude, we made a lot of, for me, because it was like different, you know, like the time, like.
That was your generation.
Yeah, we were the store credit generation, you know. There was like the places that you could cash out. I don't even know if they exist anymore, but there was like the places that would buy gift cards, you know. And we kept them motherfuckers in business, you know. And then there was people that would buy the fucking gift cards, and we would kept those motherfuckers in business. And then I was always about trying to get the next fucking hustle, you know. My friend Laura, who, did you meet her another night?
I don't think so.
Dude, like. Dude, Lawrence knows her. She's going to come on. She's got out of federal prison, you know, and she's the best, you know? And like, we were just like shooting like shit back and forth. And she reminded me of, so we did this thing where I would like, as good as a hustle was, you know, like I always was trying to like figure out how to like over hustle the hustle, you know, like how to squeeze every last little drop out of it, you know? So I had a thing where like, there would always be like these, like technology kind of like made, like could either fuck up your whole shit. Or if you like knew how to finesse it and use it to your advantage, you could really like open up doors for it, you know? So I had this thing where we would go and we would boost shit and then go and return it for store credit and then get a gift card, right? And we would either have the gift card, the guys that would buy the gift cards, or the connect that would fucking trade the gift card for some, you know, for dope, which like, you know, I had a dudes that were doing like 75 cents on the dollar, like in trade for drugs, you know, which is fucking great because I would literally walk into Home Depot and get like LED strip lighting, which you work in, like, you know exactly how much that shit's worth, or breakers, you know, like shit like that. I wouldn't even leave the store. I would literally walk over to the fucking exchange and fucking whatever and the returns and would say, hey, I don't have a receipt. My stepdad, you know, I'd be on the phone and I'd be talking in Russian to my stepdad. No, 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 you're like literally having a conversation with myself to make it fucking that convincing, you know? No, 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 they don't have, I know I didn't. Receipt, no store receipt, you know, like saying like some receipt, you know, like as I'm talking and walking up to the next one, you know, and I go, hey, my stepdad had me bring this stuff, you know, my dad had me bring this stuff, a fucking project, you know?
Did they ever turn you down?
Very rare. They tried, you know, but it's like, I don't know if you know this, like if you can relate to this. We had this thing that like we learned like going to shows and doing drugs and whatever. It's like you gotta have like the fucking Jedi, you know, like you gotta like turn on your fucking Jedi fucking mind tricks. Like, you know, if you can convince yourself, like if you believe enough that you belong there or whatever, like you'll never get turned away. You can get into any pit fucking at any show. You can walk out of any store, you can walk into fucking pretty much any party event, whatever. It don't fucking matter. You know, you just gotta believe that like that if you can convince somebody that you're there, or if you don't even give them a chance to jam you up, you're never going to get jammed up, you know? So we had this thing where we would do the store credit thing, and then we would trade it for 75 cents on the dollar. And then these apps kind of came around, like with like early iPhones, where you could store your gift cards on your phone, right? So I would go, and like me and some homies, Laura being one of them, we would have a thing where we would like, I would go to Home Depot and I'd get $400 in credit, right? Then I would hit up fucking Keith and I'd be like, yo, Keith, I got $400 in credit. You'd give me whatever $300 in fucking in meth or dope or whatever for it, right? So I would come over. We sit there. You call the gift card because a motherfucker like me is going to try to get over on you. Even though I'm going to come back to you the next day trying to get dope, you know, I'm still going to try to get over on you. So you're going to call right away and check the balance on the gift card, you know, and make sure that there's an actual $400 on it before you give me anything. So you call, we sit there. Yes, that's the right balance. I give you the physical Kif guard. You give me the dope. I text Ed. I go, run it, you know? And Ed's in the fucking store ready to buy more shit with, now he has that fucking gift card on his phone because they introduced these like gift app or whatever, you know? So then you run it. You buy more shit with that card before Keith can make it over to Home Depot and use the card, you know? Then we go take it to another Home Depot and return it and just keep it fucking, keep the hustle going. Keith calls me, what the fuck happened to the gift card? I go, I don't know. We were there together. We fucking called. We checked the balance on it. What the fuck are you talking about? You know, here's the receipt, everything, dude. I mean, it was like, it just, I got over more. Like, I enjoyed that more than the fucking stealing or probably even getting loaded. It was just like getting over on fucking everybody, on my dealer, on the fucking store, on everybody.
I was dating this girl named Laura. She was like my road dog for a long time. We dated for 4 years off and on. I was in and out of prison. And I watched her one time. She was like 100 pounds soaking wet, you know, 5'5", like beautiful, tiny, small girl. And she walked up. She did the same thing you did. She didn't even steal it. She grabs a chainsaw at Home Depot and walks up and just got cash for it. And I was like, yeah, they're not going to believe that's yours. And she's like, yeah, they will.
Yeah.
I remember one time we were, you know, Nordstrom used to, I mean, they do cash back too. And we were up in San Francisco and we would, you know, steal all kinds of shit from Nordstrom too. And one time I'm in the alley, we're at the Nordstrom on Market Street and I'm parked in the alley behind there. And she's up there for a long time, like 45 minutes or something. And usually, you know, with stealing, you're in and out, like 5 minutes, you fucking hit it and you're out. And, like Danny was saying, it's that you're invisible, right? You just want to be in and out. Like nobody even, you want to have the shit before they even know you're there. And she comes walking down the alley with this big smile on her face. And I'm like, oh fuck, what she got? She had like a Chanel dress and like a Dolce & Gabbana dress. Like it was like $5,500 total, like the two dresses together. And I'm like, and we're junkies, like, right? We're like living in a car. I'm like, they're not going to let us return this shit. So we go over to the other one and it was like, I mean, I felt like we hit the fucking lottery. Like she came out with like $5,500 in cash from like the other Nordstrom, the one out on the west side of San Francisco. We were like,
damn.
Whatever happened to her?
Dude, it's sad. The last time I saw her, she was walking the boulevard in San Diego, prostituting herself, methadone, like bad. It was bad. And that was 15 years. She was probably in her mid 30s by then. I met her when she was 18. And yeah, it was bad, all bad.
There's no streetwalkers anywhere anymore, right?
What do you mean? Oh, hell yeah, there is. What the?
Yeah. I never see them in Hollywood or anything.
Oh, man, you got to go down Fig.
Oh, downtown?
Yeah. You want to go down like Fig and 60th, you know, dude. I got a panel down there, you know. Yeah. Like, you'll come. I'll bring you motherfuckers on this panel. We'll take Fig back up, you know. I took Camille on it and we're driving and she goes, the fuck is that? Like, what? And I was like, oh, you like fucking hold on to your seat, you know? Hundreds of them. Wearing nothing. Oh, yeah. Swalking, you know? And she was like to the point where she's like, we got to take another. She's like, I can't believe my fucking eyes, you know? Hundreds of them on the corner. And this is like, my panel's from 7 till 8 p.m. It's in Watts, you know? Like, but coming back, like, you hit the 80s and then you hit the 60s and, like, you know, there's different levels of them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
shit.
Mm-hmm. And you would think we got the internet now. Like, what do you.
That's what I mean. I never see any on Sunset, though. Do you?
No, Sunset's burnt, you know? Now the ones that were on Sunset, there's a few of them, like, they're on Western. They'll go, like, Western, a little south of, like, Melrose, you know? And, like, between Melrose and, like, a little north of Melrose down to, like, Beverly, you know? And there's, like, a very little, like, a very, very little strip, right? Yeah, but, like, really Fig is where it's at. Mm. You know, it's crazy. I've never gotten a prostitute off of, like, Craigslist. I've never gotten one. Like, I've never gotten an escort or none of that, you know? But the street, I was like a straight to the streets kind of guy myself.
What's your book going to be called, Ed?
Fried.
Oh, yeah. Ed's got a book coming out called Fried. I think we're good.
No. Sometime. Yeah, I got to finish it. It's almost done. It's been in the works for a minute.
Well, when it's done, we'll plug it on here.